This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Lot to get into this week. Thanks for joining me here. We have a terrific show lined up for you. Evan Rutkowski, the former HBO marketing executive, he has got a terrific boxing podcast. He joins me in studio, and we go through everything we saw last weekend with Canelo and Kovalev to the delay that DAZN decided to implement to get away from the UFC fight. We also look ahead to the event that DAZN's putting on, KSI and Logan Paul, and why the boxing community has such a big issue with that fight. Quickly, to explain why the audio sounds a little bit different in the middle of that interview, I've been battling some food poisoning out here in Los Angeles. We did half the interview together and the other half in a different setting. So the audio is a little bit different. It breaks up in the middle of that podcast. A little bit later on, Shannon Briggs, the former two-time heavyweight champion of the world, he joins me in studio, and we talk about the last few years of Shannon's career, the hunting of Vladimir Klitschko, and just what he thinks of his career overall, plus his position as trainer for Logan Paul in this upcoming YouTube star fight. So stick around for that. It's a great conversation with Shannon Briggs. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, Evan Rutkowski is here, former HBO marketing executive. You can catch his podcast every couple of weeks, the Fistionados podcast and the Leave It in the Ring radio network, and he joins me back in Los Angeles. What's up, Evan?
Good to be back.
Thanks for stopping in here in the downtown LA area. God knows how long it takes you to get to...
I live on the west side. I don't make it down here too often, but...
Like visiting a new city. It's like a different part of town.
It's great.
There's a lot I want to get into with you, and I guess we start kind of looking back at last weekend. Canelo Alvarez scores a big knockout win over Sergey Kovalev, adds a light heavyweight championship to his resume. Not the most entertaining fight, a pretty spectacular knockout, despite what some boxers and ex-boxers have said about that being a fake, Kovalev taking a dive, which is one of the most insane things.
Don't even go there.
We won't. Yeah,
we're
not.
Don't even go there.
We might touch on that later, but that's neither here nor there. The part of the story in that event, though, was DAZN's decision to wait for the UFC event to be over. So that forced DAZN to wait for about an hour and 40 minutes after the co-main, Ryan Garcia, knocked out Romero Duno in the first round. The optics weren't great. You had visuals of Kovalev and Canelo kind of resting on the couch. People have said that, hey, you got the biggest star in the sport waiting for two journeymen to fight in a UFC match. Dana White certainly was giddy about all that, especially when it comes to Oscar De La Hoya. Let me get your thoughts on DAZN's decision and what you thought of it kind of in real time.
Well, I think my biggest – so there's a lot to unpack here. And I think optically you're right. It's a terrible look. And DAZN is just going to sit here and say, okay – we did this, and there was a serious uptick in subscriber numbers and in new people signing on. And to casual fans, they might be right. There might have actually been significant casual fans who were really happy about this decision. But you've got my biggest criticism before we even get into some of the deeper stuff is it's inconsistent with your value system at DAZN. Like, DAZN is not in the one-night stand business. Pay-per-view is in, that's the one-night stand business. DAZN is a subscription business. You're trying to get people to sign up for year-long subscriptions. You're in the customer satisfaction business. Like, you're in it for consumers. And the action that you took there is really consistent with the one-night stand business. You basically said, it's more important to us for everybody to wait an hour and 40 minutes so we can get a few extra subs, get a little bump here. Our numbers are more important than your consumer satisfaction. And that's inconsistent with everything they did. That's inconsistent with how they've marketed this whole push here. They marketed it as fight season. They didn't market it as individual events. I mean, you did see some individual event push, but for the most part, people saw this as fight season, and it was a great fight season. It's been a great fight season. We've seen a lot of great fights, but this action in particular, I think when people sign up for a pay-per-view, they know what they're getting. They know I'm paying $75 or $85 or whatever it is, and I'm getting one night of fights. Well, here it's like I want – this is what I'm getting. I'm getting a huge number of great fights, and for some people, they're only going to – the casuals are only going to care about Canelo and, you know, AJ Ruiz and, you know, maybe one or two other things. But your core base is going to care about all of it. And you just made a decision that really, really upset them, and justifiably so. You at least with pay-per-view, people know what they're buying. With this, your action was completely inconsistent with that value system.
Look, I don't disagree with a lot of what you said there. The devil's advocate in all this is, are the hardcore boxing fans that are complaining, aren't they just going to stay? Like, aren't they still... As much as they gripe about waiting until quarter one East Coast time, aren't they just going to say? And on the flip side of it, you know, the way DAZN's framed it, that, you know, a lot of Canelo fans are West Coast, and that puts it in that primetime window.
Well, that's – yeah, so they are going to stay. The hardcore boxing fan base is taken advantage of is the lightest way you can put it. I mean, they're basically, you know, you can say they're abused consistently. They're certainly financially taken advantage of as much as possible with the, you know, with the pay-per-view system. And they will stay, but the pay-per-view system, again, it goes back to, you know what you're getting for that. And with here, it's a little bit of a breach of trust, I think. And I think they have a right to complain about that. I think some of the other stuff, look, Canelo's fan base, you know, there's a lot of evidence that suggests you can start fights later and later and people will tune in. And that's especially with Canelo's fan base. I mean, you know, unofficially, you're starting to hear stuff like, oh, 75% of the signups were based in California. Well, that's Canelo's fan base, and that makes sense. And look, I talk to people out here. I mean, one of the guys I do Leave It in the Ring with, he lives in Northern California, Dave, and he threw a party, and he didn't even notice the hour and a half. You know, he was like, this is great. We're all hanging out. We're finally actually getting to party, like, at a normal time for the West Coast. But the East Coast fans, you're leaving in the lurch. And it is – you can point to larger statistics. I think it's over 80% of the TV viewing audience is either in Central or Eastern time. And 1:18 is just way too late. Like, you're not going to a party at that point. Like, that's just way too late for anything. But, you know, there is a significant audience for Canelo on the West Coast. If you identify that, like, that's great. But I still think you've got to keep these East Coast fans happy, too. Like, DAZN isn't something that can regionally survive off just having subscriptions in California.
All right, so talk to me about what the bigger issue is. Is it the fact that the fight started at, you know, 1 o'clock Eastern time, or is it because they waited for a UFC fight to end, leaving the biggest star in the sport waiting for the equivalent of two journeymen fighting for the baddest motherfucker belt?
Well, so to me, the second part is what's getting the narrative, and that narrative isn't good. But I think that's something that only hardcore fans and maybe boxing journalists and people who love boxing a lot really care about. At the end of the day, that's not going to get you the subscription numbers that you care about. And I understand making the decision to go for the, you know, make the decision that in the moment gets you those subscribers. But if you look back at it ultimately, I think that the really short answer to this is you just have to be true to your consumer, be it a core fan or be it a casual fan. And I think there's ways you could have gone about this simply by putting on the fight right after Ryan Garcia fought, you know, that would have made everybody happy. But I think there's a lot of other big issues that, you know, touching back on this sort of boxing versus UFC narrative. I mean, first of all, this is like a streaming era thing. In the cable pay-per-view world, this never would have happened. Like, in demand, like, Mark McCarty never would have let this happen. You know, and no one at in demand, I think that's just the cable systems on the whole. They're never going to put two big, you know, money-making events like up against each other like that. Now, there has been times where ego has played a part of this in the past, but that's like the first line of defense. I think there's other ways. You know, if you really look at the root of the problem here for DAZN, this event had its own date. This event should have happened on September 15th, where there would have been no competition. No, you're not running into this narrative of what's the bigger event. I mean, the president of the United States attended the UFC fight. So that won that wins the narrative as the bigger event. I mean, I can't even remember the last time a president, you know, you got to go back decades probably to the last time a president attended a fight. That's a huge win for the UFC, but also UFC has a lot of advantages. They were able to market their event specifically. They got the date first. They knew they were going to MSG probably, you know, months in advance probably. I mean, they didn't know it was going to be specifically the Nate Diaz fight. But part of DAZN's marketing strategy, when you market fight season, you actually take away elements of specifically marketing the Canelo-Kovalev fight. And a lot of what they did in terms of marketing it, they went really broad on a lot of big television. And they, you know, from my experience doing this at HBO, when you do national spots like that, they actually don't allow you to put the day, the date, or the time in your ad. And that takes away from building up to this, you know, this big moment. But that's all, to an extent, like, superfluous. Like, really, the core of the issue is you had a date. It was September 15th, and your partner let you down. Like, your partner, Golden Boy, could have made the fight for that date, and they didn't. And that's a major, major issue.
So, your opinion, there's effectively no amount of subscribers that makes it worth it, that would come over, you know, because DAZN will tell you that they had, you know, whatever amount it was coming over after that fight. There's really no amount that makes that decision worth it.
I mean, look. There is obviously an amount that makes it worth it, but whatever you were going to gain here, you know, apparently one of the most controversial things you can say on Twitter is there is crossover between MMA and boxing. There is, especially in the casual fan base. In the hardcore,
there's evidence of that now. I mean,
yeah. I mean, especially in the casual fan base. So you're going for that, but we're still talking like. It couldn't, if that's all you're going for, it couldn't have been that much. And I mean, you look at the way other sports treat it. I mean, World Series isn't going to move their game off a Thursday night because NFL football is on Thursday night, or, you know, they just schedule the World Series. It's a big event. And I think that's how you got to treat it.
What was the, you know, when I look back at the last big fight on HBO, Canelo Golovkin 2, they slowed that fight down a lot too. Remember they had three first round knockouts.
Yep.
I think it was like an hour and 10 minutes that they
David
delayed on that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, David Lemieux and Spike O'Sullivan.
Yeah, Jaime Munguia.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing though. I think that goes back to when you sign up for a pay per view, you just roll your eyes when you see that because they timed it wrong, they screwed it up. But like, you know what you bought. You bought one night of fights for $75 and you know, or whatever that price was, and you know that they're gonna wait, that most people only care about the main event. So the hardcore fans already know that they're gonna wait a while till a bunch of the casual buys come in. You haven't I'm not suggesting you're lying to them. I just think that this decision is inconsistent with your value system.
All right, so let's look at the performance of Canelo himself moving up to 175. What were your thoughts about this fight coming in, and what were your takeaways from how Canelo performed?
You know, I thought it was a relatively boring fight. There were at times it looked like a kind of like a sparring session, like a glorified sparring session. But Canelo picked his time. You could actually kind of, and you've seen some, you know, I've seen some really smart people on social media break this down where Kovalev
kind of
got
an oxymoron there.
Yeah, well, sorry. Yeah. I am one of those people who still goes on social media and I see the way smart people do it. But yes, that is not the way most of the time it works. But you can see how Kovalev got a little bit lazy. Canelo pursued the right strategy the whole time. It was a close fight, and there was a lot of drama with it. But once he had it set up, he was, you know, he took his shots, he hit him, and you know, it was a great knockout.
People were fired up at me. I mean, scoring fights now, I've learned that, you know, nobody's ever going to be happy. But
yeah,
you know, Canelo's defense was great.
I thought it was too.
He was blocking everything.
Well, to suggest that, you know, he landed all the bigger shots, and to suggest that, you know, Kovalev was throwing out his jab. That was one of the weakest probing jabs I've ever seen. It didn't do any damage at all. There's nothing to suggest there that he was disciplining Canelo in any way, shape, or form. Like, Canelo was fighting his fight, and that was, you have to give him credit for that. He did a great job with that.
All right, let's talk about the performance by Canelo Alvarez, Evan. He jumps up to 175. He gets an opportunity against Kovalev. Coming into that fight, he was a pretty significant favorite. I think people looked at Kovalev as being on the back end of his career. He had a bit of a resurgence under Buddy McGirt, but I think even though Canelo was giving up, what, like 3 inches, maybe 4 inches in height, people looked at him as a favorite. And it wasn't the most entertaining fight in the world, but Canelo once again, I thought, showed great defense. He once again, you know, landed big punches. And that knockout was, right up there with knockout of the year as a knockout of the year contender. What did you think of his overall performance?
It was definitely a great knockout. And you're right. I mean, that might, the way he set it up, it might end up being one of those knockout of the year candidates, but you're absolutely right. I mean, to say it wasn't the most entertaining fight is an understatement. I looked at it as, I almost glorified sparring. I mean, you know, Kovalev, his jab wasn't effective at all. I don't, you know, it was definitely close. I could see how it was close on a lot of the scorecards. I think you had Canelo up by two rounds, maybe something like that. And I think most people scoring it had similar scores, or, you know, maybe some people had it even or had Kovalev up by a round. I actually found it tough to give Kovalev too many rounds. I think Canelo was executing his game plan better. And you could see how Kovalev was getting lazy and started to make some of those mistakes towards the end. He got tired and he didn't have the stamina to compete with Canelo. But Canelo, you're right. He stuck to his game plan. It was not the most scintillating performance, but it ended up being a scintillating knockout. So all credit to him for that.
Do you watch a performance like that and think that Canelo could hang with the Dmitry Bivols and Artur Beterbiev's of the world, or did he just pick kind of the exact right light heavyweight? He should get away from that weight class as fast as possible.
You know, it's weird. I think Kovalev was the weakest of all the title holders, but when you look at someone like Beterbiev, I actually think despite how incredible he was against Fosdick, I actually think Canelo could win rounds against him. It would be a different strategy than what we saw against Kovalev, and I think it'd be one of those, you know, sort of tightrope acts to see if he could pull it off and not. It's a version of what happened to Vozdik with him. Like he'd be trying to avoid that fate, but I think he could. I really think he could. It does start to feel like he's not really the same size as those guys, though. He definitely had a real defensive shell against Kovalev. You know, Bivol's a different style. I think he probably could beat Bivol, but, you know, we'd really have to see what Bivol's chin is like. I mean, he may have to get a knockdown or a knockout to beat someone like Bivol. Bivol's technically sound enough where, you know, he might be able to outpoint Canelo. But yeah, that'd be an interesting fight.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see Bivol go up against Beterbiev first. I mean, I think they, you know, to get three titles and fight Canelo for the undisputed championship, I think that's the only way a matchup like that has the requisite juice. I think it needs to be kind of built up and have something significant on the line, because Bivol, you know, he was walking around the MGM Grand on Saturday and nobody knew who he was. Like he is just an anonymous title holder. It's not necessarily his fault, but you know, he's still very much an unknown. Beterbiev coming off the best performance of his career, but he's still, I think, an unknown. You got to juice that, I think, with a undisputed championship on the line for anyone to really take that seriously. But the idea that Canelo could now fight Golovkin, I watched Golovkin fight in his last time out, and look, you can certainly say he was sick and that had something to do with it, and it contributed to kind of a lackluster performance against Derevyanchenko. But at this point, Evan, I'd make Canelo a pretty massive favorite, no matter what the weight class against Golovkin. If it's 168, even down at 160, I'm not sure I see the path to victory for Golovkin at this stage.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think the takeaway, sick or not, the takeaway from Golovkin's last performance is that DAZN, really, they signed him to this big contract, and you have to match. If you're DAZN, now I'm not saying if you're a fan, but if you're DAZN, you've got to get Golovkin in there with Canelo as quickly as possible. I mean, that's still a big fight. That still resonates with the casual audience. And I think that would do big business for DAZN. That would definitely be a subscription driver for sure. But you've got to get him in there as quickly as possible. You know, it's one thing against this mandatory guy. I'm sure Golovkin will beat him. But up against Canelo, I think Canelo's a huge favorite. And look, Golovkin can still prove us all wrong. He's a great fighter, but he's definitely lost a step. And you want to, if you're DAZN, you've just got him signed to this incredibly expensive contract, and you've got to get as much out of him as possible.
Yeah, I'd like to see the fight happen in May. I don't know if I have a huge problem with it, with him fighting that Polish kid, the mandatory, in Chicago in like February. That seems to be the direction that Eddie Hearn is trying to steer Golovkin and get him at least get him a good win. Like, the Derevchenko fight wasn't a very good win. A lot of people thought it was he either lost it or was too close to call. I think he needs a knockout to kind of build some momentum for that fight. So if we see that fight in September, I'd be okay with that at this point. But that, at, you know, after 2020, I mean, I don't know what value it really has, especially. And I'm not sure that Golovkin can stay unbeaten at that point and sort of in position to fight Canelo. But the you know, one thing that came up, and I wrote about this the morning after, and I saw every boxing writer I know the morning after writing about Canelo's place on the pound-for-pound list. And, you know, he's widely viewed as not quite as skilled as a Lomachenko, who's a two-time gold medalist, as a Terence Crawford, who certainly has a high degree of skill. But at some point, Evan, I think you got to factor in resume. And if you compare the resumes of Canelo against either one of those two guys, really anybody in boxing, nobody really stands up. Like, he has got the best resume of anybody out there from 154 to 175. And I think that should be enough to place him at number one.
So I think I would place him number one, or I'd place Inoue number one. But you're also talking to the wrong person. Anyone who takes pound for pound list very seriously should not really, you're not going to like what I have to say on this, because I would use pound, I would sell anything as a pound for pound matchup. I mean, it just this year alone, if I was in charge of marketing the events, I would have sold Crawford's fight as for pound for pound, you know, king. I would have sold Spence's fight as, hey, he's going to be the pound for pound best. Every Canelo fight, I would have said it's for pound implications. I think it's just a great selling tool, and I don't take it that seriously, in terms of boxing lore or anything like that. But the resume, Canelo and Manny Pacquiao have by far the two best resumes of any active fighters. And it's not even close. It's not even close.
Yeah, I wasn't even – you're right about Pacquiao. I wasn't putting him in that mix at this point because of his age. And
yeah, exactly. He's not –
but definitely yeah. – But definitely a great resume. Let me ask you about Kovalev. Is there a use for him at this point? If you're DAZN, you now have him, I believe, for two more fights. Is it, you know, comeback fight? I had heard the name Karo Murat thrown around in the immediate aftermath of Kovalev's loss. And then I guess you line him up for Bivol at some point. I mean, what kind of use does Kovalev have after a loss like that?
I'm not sure that he has that much use. I mean, it's – first of all, he's got a couple legal hurdles to get over first and foremost. But, you know, I think more importantly, with DAZN, you're not really invested in that weight class. And what are you going to find out by having Kovalev back on? I mean, you get him a comeback fight, and then you try to match him up against Bivol. But what are you really doing with Bivol? Do you have a long-term commitment with him? You know, all these questions. I mean, ESPN is really the place that has a large stake in what's happening at light heavyweight, unless Canelo is going to stay there. And then if Canelo is going to stay there, that would be the one exception where, if you're DAZN, you have a great use for Kovalev, because you want one of Canelo's next opponents to beat him, and that can be used as a way to get a fight with Canelo with some kind of legitimacy at 175.
Yeah, I'm interested what they decide to do with him. I mean, my understanding with the early negotiations was that there would be a Bivol fight at some point in 2020, but he's going to take a long time off. Like, he's going to be off probably until, you know, late next spring, as he kind of recovers from what's been a pretty tough year for him physically, you know, going, you know, to three fights and of course, going right into a next training camp. So we'll see if they can find a way to use him.
Bivol would make sense, though, just because Bivol can go down to 168 and fight Canelo there if Canelo doesn't want to go right down to 160. So that's a great place to end up if you're going to use him that way to build up Bivol.
Oh, I think if Bivol would fight Canelo at 160, I think Bivol would just hunt Canelo around and do whatever he wants at this point. That was my read of that situation. Let me ask you about the relationship between Canelo and Oscar De La Hoya. I mean, it was frosty, to say the least, all week. You know, they barely interacted. I was watching them in the ring, and Oscar kind of tapped Canelo to congratulate him at the very end, but that was it. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any kind of relationship between those two. I mean, you watched that relationship kind of blossom over at HBO. What do you make of kind of where it is right now and where it goes from here?
Well, this goes back to what, you know, we were talking about earlier. I mean, if you're DAZN, you've got to take a serious look at this relationship, and it hasn't done anything positive for you. I mean, if I'm Canelo, I think Bernard Hopkins actually said this in an interview with Brian Campbell, during fight week, where he was like, if I was in that position, I would leave. I mean, he quickly then said, I'm going to be the one who figures this out and make sure that everything's good with Golden Boy. I believe that that was the tone of it, but we're really getting to the point where you gotta look at, like, hey, is Canelo going to leave Golden Boy? I mean, I think it makes sense at this point if you're Canelo. You know, what has Golden Boy really done for you? Like, I talk about it all the time. I'm like, if you're Golden Boy, you haven't even really come up with an opponent for him. You haven't signed any 160 or 168 pounders. I mean, basically, Jaime Munguia and David Lemieux are the only two fighters of note that you have anywhere close to this weight class. It puts DAZN in a weird position because they have to root for Canelo. Like, they don't own both sides of the equation when they make a fight. You know, Danny Jacobs, they didn't really have a long-term relationship with him. When they did that fight, obviously they had to steal Kovalev essentially from ESPN. It makes it really difficult for everyone. And when you look at what's happening at Golden Boy, you know, you've really got to question I'm not on the inside there, but just when you read the news, I mean, what is going on there? Like, that's insane, you know, with what's happening with Oscar. And Coppinger wrote a great story on this. I mean, I don't want to step all over that. He's the one who actually got Canelo to talk about it on the record. But I think a lot of people knew this was happening.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely did. And I don't know if it's fixable. Now, if you're DAZN, do you want Canelo to move to another promoter? I mean, that was not a great promotion for Canelo Kovalev. I mean, you look at the weigh-in, and it was one of the more sparsely attended weigh-ins that I've seen for Canelo Alvarez, which was surprising, given that, you know, this was a pretty significant moment for him to go up to 175 and try to fight there. Oscar wasn't all that visible during fight week. And look, at his best, Oscar De La Hoya can be a major asset to a promotion because everybody knows him. He's got great name ID, brand ID. He can do all these interviews. But if he's not front and center and the narrative is the relationship with Canelo, it's not great. So I wonder if you're DAZN, which has Canelo locked in for, what is it now, like 8 more fights at this point, do you want him to kind of, do you want to steer him to like an Eddie Hearn or somebody that you're closer to work with? That's a question I'm wondering right now.
Well, when Oscar's at his best, there's almost no one better doing it. You know, I watched Oscar on some HBO fights. He would just go up and down Radio Row. He was right. Amazing. He'd sell the fight. He'd figure out crazy ways. You know, I always talk about, there was one fight in particular, I worked on the Canelo Chavez Jr. fight. And there's actually this moment, you know, I remember the moment. If you remember the spot, he wanted to put both Canelo and Chavez Jr. running through a wall as like a symbolic, this is right around the Trump election and, you know, the Mexico build the wall thing. And we were like, you're crazy. Like, you're just going to, you know, piss off a bunch of people who, you know, any Republican boxing fan is. And we thought he was crazy. He actually made it work. Like, he did it. He got Maggie Haberman to write an article about it in the New York Times. And he understands his base so well. And he, that fight far exceeded pay-per-view sale expectations, you know, for a variety of reasons. But when he's at his best, he's really great at this. I don't know what's happening right now. I mean, if I'm DAZN, I have serious concerns about it. Do you hope something like that happens? I don't know. I mean, they got to be, you know, they have to get more involved, especially with, you know, again, we referenced this earlier. This fight should have been on September 15th. This fight should have been better promoted. It shouldn't have gone up against a UFC fight. This came down to like botched negotiations, it seems like. And again, I wasn't there, but I'm reading reports and Kathy Duva has been pretty honest about this. And when you look at it, it's like, yeah, I mean, if I was them, unless Oscar proved to me that he was, you know, becoming a lot more stable, I would hope Canelo would move on. But it is Oscar De La Hoya. You do have to give him the benefit of the doubt because he is so great when he's at his best.
Yeah, it almost has to come to a head over the next few months. I mean, you mentioned what Bernard said. He said he wanted to get them in the room and, you know, he'd either leave them there or he'd be the kind of middleman in all this and sit down and hash everything out. But if they do that and they can't hash everything out, I mean, you've got to you got to kind of move on. I mean, I know the Golden Boy's not going to want to do that because Canelo means real money for them. And look, without Canelo, they're kind of a very, I mean, they're like main events in a way. Like, they're just a small operation with, you know, some decent young fighters like a Virgil Ortiz and Ryan Garcia. But without that tentpole, it's a problem. But I think you got to, and maybe DAZN plays a role in this. Like, maybe they insist that they get in a room and this thing gets settled, because you're right. If he's not being what Oscar De La Hoya has been, it makes it, it's useless. It really is in situations like that.
Well, and just in terms of Canelo, it's like, why don't you do what Oscar ended up doing? He's at the point in his career where he could start his own promotional company if he wanted. And what, you know, what are the benefits of having Oscar? Well, Oscar was there. He has a lot of experience, you know, doing this. He's kind of seen this pathway before. But if he's not really physically there and he's not on point, then I understand it if you're Canelo. I would want to, you know, maybe it's not do your own thing, but maybe it's do what Floyd did and sort of hire, you know, one specific place out to just kind of cover the basic promotional tasks, you know, and maybe some more advanced stuff, but it, not actually see a huge upside of it. You know, it, just sort of have a promoter work for you, basically. And Canelo's in a position to do that. I'm sure Eddie Hearn would love to do that, and I'm sure there's other promoters that would love to do that as well.
Yeah, we talked about the stretching earlier, but what did you make of Dana White just going all in on Oscar? Like, Dana, I mean, there's clearly hatred. And Dana's hatred dates back to McGregor versus Mayweather, where Oscar was lampooning that fight, and Dana didn't love that, what Oscar was doing that. But Dana took this opportunity, man, to just take a proverbial 2x4 to Oscar. He said he respected Canelo and everything that's going on with the fighters, but, man, I didn't realize the disdain was that bad between Dana and Oscar.
Well, Dana's going to dine out on this moment for years, I'm sure, because, you know, his event was the bigger event. He, you know, he got to bash Oscar. You know, he's going to probably talk forever about how they were playing the UFC fight in, you know, in the actual Canelo, you know, stadium. I mean, it's this is his moment, basically. And I think that's one of the things that frustrated everybody who's hardcore boxing fans, because it shouldn't have been, but, you know, that's how it got set up and that's how it happened. I don't know. Dana, when you give him ammunition like this, he's going to take you to the woodshed. I mean, that's just what he's going to do.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, let me finish talking about a little bit about the fight this weekend. DAZN going outside the box for a fight between two YouTube stars, KSI and Logan Paul. It's going to headline a card at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. It's going to appear as on DAZN. It's going to be backstopped by Devin Haney, who's one of the best young fighters, maybe the best young fighter in boxing. Billy Joe Saunders is going to be on the card. And this fight, Evan, man, like, the boxing purist, if they were angry about the weight for Canelo Kovalev, this just, you know, poured gasoline on that. They are angry about KSI and Logan Paul. And I got to be honest, before I get your take on it, I'm not sure why. I'm still trying to figure out what the issue is with doing a fight like this. Is it that you're giving it a platform like DAZN that just, you know, featured Canelo Kovalev and features Golovkin and features a lot of the top fighters in boxing? Is it the placement of it? The fact that it's headlining a major event? I don't really understand exactly what everybody is so angry about. Like, I didn't know who KSI and Logan Paul was, you know, before this whole thing kind of started. They're not having me specifically call that fight for DAZN. It's going to be kind of a new kind of younger crew for that specific fight. But I don't have a big issue with it. Like, if it's a business decision for DAZN, which it clearly is, I think it's a decent roll of the dice that people are getting way too upset about at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, to me, if this is going to be something, first of all, I think DAZN has put out a really good schedule at a really great price. So just from that perspective, I'm like, if you guys want to do something like this, and this gets you new subscribers, and this helps you, you know, make your case to get these next bigger sports and keeps you around, great, keep doing it. To the boxing purists, I mean, you don't have to watch it, you know. You don't need to come down from Mount Pius and announce you're canceling your subscription for a week, but, like, you know, you don't actually need to watch this. Like, this wasn't something that DAZN was marketing to the fight purists. and it's going to a different crowd. And from DAZN's perspective, it does make sense. I mean, if they're going to do several more of these, maybe there is a way, you know, not just to keep the subscription numbers higher and to keep people interested and offer, you know, more diverse programming. Maybe there is a way to cross this stuff over. I don't know. I mean, boxing, it's not like this is a new concept in boxing. This kind of thing has existed, you know, for years. I mean, in MMA, like, I am a casual MMA fan. I tuned into all of Kimbo Slice's fights, and those drew huge TV ratings and allowed, you know, places like Bellator to actually stay on the airwaves. So I don't see the problem, especially if you're going to, you know, turn it into a sustainable business. Now, if it's a one-off and it doesn't do that well, if DAZN just admits defeats and then goes back to making, you know, solid fights, like, fine. But I don't have a real problem with this. I mean, I really don't. I get excited when other people discover boxing, and every hardcore fan discovered it somehow. I'll tell you where you know, one of the things I was thinking about, family, you know, California is one of the only places where you talk about how'd you get into boxing. You watch it with your family because it comes on so early here. And especially when you put on a fight at 118, no one's watching boxing, you know, no teenagers watching boxing with their family at that point. But this is the kind of thing where it does get a younger audience involved. Maybe they end up being hardcore fans. This is never going to grow boxing in a real way unless you make a major commitment to it. But if it's going to grow DAZN's business, I don't have a problem with it at all. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too. And a couple things I would say. One, if you don't like the fight, turn it off after Devin Haney fights. I mean, you've got Billy Joe Saunders on the undercard, and Saunders, I think, is a realistic candidate to fight Canelo in May. I think that's legit. I mean, you know, one thing Canelo can spin it is saying you don't have a real 168-pound title. This would be a real 168-pound title. I think if Saunders looks really good, or at least, you know, fun to watch, which he hasn't always looked, I think that could be a plus. And Devin Haney's becoming kind of one of those guys that you want to see. Like, he's 20 years old. He's, you know, I we'll call him a world champion. You know, we're not going to get too deep in the weeds on the franchise championship right now, but he's one of the brightest stars in all of boxing. It's a week removed from watching Ryan Garcia do his thing at 135 pounds. Just watch them and then turn the damn thing off. The other thing too is, like, you know, it's not high-level boxing, no question, but they fought the first time. It was competitive. They had headgear on. It was competitive. It was a draw over in Manchester Arena in England. And now they're taking it, I think, a little more seriously. They're bringing different people into the camps. You got Jeff Mayweather, you know, who's around KSI. You've got Shannon Briggs, who, you know, as people listen later in this podcast, is still as crazy as ever. You've got some real boxing people involved in this fight. Now, nobody's going to sit there and say it's high-level boxing, but let's all kind of sit back and look at what some of the prelims and the undercards look like on major fights. I mean, I called or was there for Evan Holyfield making his debut against, you know, a guy that at one point I think wore shorts with pockets in them. So it's like, well, what are we doing? Like,
that was not the definition of high level boxing there.
But you and I have both, like, this will not be the worst fight that we've seen this month. It won't be. It's getting real placement and it's the headliner, but this is not going to be the worst fight that we see this month. So if it does bring in a younger audience, and look, this is like, we're in the social media generation. Like, Devin Haney makes no bones about it. Like, he wants to go out there, look impressive, and have all these kids out there, you know, follow him on Instagram and become kind of Devin Haney fans. I don't know if that's going to happen, but he wants that to happen. You've got, you know, Justin Bieber, you know, Instagramming about it. Like, this is kind of a big deal, and you're going to get real boxers who are going to fill the whole undercard, get a chance to fight in front of an audience that they never fought before. And Evan, you don't lose anything. It's not like this fight or this card could have been headlined by somebody else. Like, DAZN's not taking a slot away from a top-tier fighter who wanted it, who now cannot fight as a headliner because of it. Like, this was KSI Logan Paul, or it was nothing. Like, so I think everybody needs to kind of take a beat and kind of get off the soapbox and just see it for what it is. I do think, to your point earlier, it can't be a one-off. I think that's, and look, whatever, you know, Logan Paul keeps saying he's going to fight 10 times next year. I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, I think you've got to keep these fans. You've got to keep having these fights, and you got to find a way to make them competitive. So that's a challenge. But man, yep. Like the holier than thou stuff is it really started to like drive me nuts the last couple of days.
No, it's, look, I like the highest level boxing possible. I love it where it's high level problem solving with severe consequences. I love that stuff where it's really body chess. I also just love a bar fight. Like, I love that too. You know, I don't care. I shamelessly love that too. And this is going to be somewhat of an elevated version of that, probably, you know, maybe with a little bit more skill than a bar fight. But these guys are interesting and that's okay. Like, you know, to your point, it's not like this was taking a slot away from anybody. And Devin Haney, I think Devin Haney's the real deal. I really think, I mean, this for him could be a great start. Now, this has got to be just the starting point. This has got to be how he starts to build his fan base. But this for him could be a great start. It could be an incredible start. And I think he has as high of a ceiling as anybody his age. You know, I think he really could be the real deal. Saunders, if we see a really interesting version of BJ Saunders, then this is going to be great for him. I've also too many times seen the other version of BJ Saunders that, you know, is going to put people to sleep and, you know, and not in a knockout way. So if it's that version of BJ Saunders, then I don't know. But, you know, BJ Saunders obviously has a lot to gain here if he's in that Canelo discussion. So
yeah, neither one of them is in particularly tough. It is a showcase fight for both of them.
Yeah, they really are. They really are.
Like, BJ Saunders is fighting like a career like middleweight, and I don't know how – I don't think the kid fighting Devin Haney, the guy fighting Devin Haney is going to last all that long, but whatever. Like, let these guys fight in front of, like – I had this – Lou DiBello was on the podcast a little while back, and he vehemently disagreed with the idea that they would gain fans. How do you know? Like, how do you – you don't know until you know, and this has not been done – at this level before in boxing. So we'll see. Like, if it turns out to be just a massive joke and everybody unsubscribes and DAZN decides not to do it moving forward, at least they tried, man. Like, it's to me, it's a worthy effort to make in a sport that kind of needs outside-the-box thinking. You can't – we talk all the time, and I've heard your podcast a lot. Like, you can't just keep going down the same, like, kind of path you've been going and expect the sport to grow at all. It's just not going to happen.
It's definitely – I mean, yeah, I applaud any outside-the-box thinking in this. And this is one of them. You're taking a chance. Now, if it doesn't work, all right, well, Devin Haney and BJ Saunders got paid, and DAZN gets some information on what it should be doing, and everybody walks away. It's like, okay, well, don't commit to that strategy if this isn't going to work. But if this does work, great. Get these new fans. I mean, there are some people at DAZN who think this can gain just as many new subscribers as Canelo Kovalev, which
yes.
is kind of incredible. I mean, that's incredible. And if it's not a one-off, if you do more of this, you can cross these people over. And that's how you start to build a business. Now, that's just got to be one part of it. This can't be like the pillar of how you build your business. But if this works, like, keep doing it. It's great. Like, I don't mind. I'm much more interested in AJ Ruiz too. And quite frankly, the Prograde Taylor and like all the World Boxing Super Series fights, those have been incredible. I love that stuff. But, you know, I'm much more interested in those fights. But if you want to do these, I'm cool with it. Just do it. You know, if it really works with the subscribers, get them. And if Devin Haney can get a lot of fans from it, great. Like, I think Devin Haney's a future superstar.
I do like the people that are saying they're canceling and they'll be back for Joshua Ruiz. You're not doing anything if you do that. Like, you paid for the month. Like, you're coming back.
Well, anybody, I mean, Twitter, I think only it's something like less than 15%, maybe it's around 15% of the United States population is on Twitter, and only like 2% of the people are really active. And at that point, if you're really active on Twitter talking about boxing, we all know you're like all of us. You're not paying $20 a month for DAZN, and you paid $99 for the year.
Right.
Like, come on. Like, you're not even unsubscribing. You're just not tuning in. That's okay. You don't have to, you know?
Yeah. It's okay. The world will not stop spinning. The boxing world will continue because of this. Evan,
Stay up on Mount Pius.
Always appreciate it, man, especially since we've stretched out this podcast as well, which I'll address at the top of it with the audio and all this. But, man, I always appreciate it. Always learn something. And thanks for joining me.
Thanks a lot. It's been fun.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, the former heavyweight champion of the world.
Two times.
Was the first one What was the first one? I know Lyakovich.
George Foreman, the lineal.
Lineal heavyweight championship, brother, right? Do we count that as a?
Yes, we do.
Okay, because yes, this, man, people.
Us boxing purists do.
Boxing purists count it. I remember last time I was with you, it was after you beat Lyakovich and before Abragimov. Mm-hmm. And I spent like 2 days with you in Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. You drove me around like a maniac in some red sports car going back and forth.
I remember that.
And we were going to do this big piece about the first asthmatic heavyweight champion and your backstory and all that.
Yeah.
And it just didn't go your way against the Abragimov that night.
It's all right. I'm still here, champ. I'm here talking to you now. Beautiful California. A couple of days before a great fight, a great event, because we have something that's never happened before. We're bringing, thousands of kids into boxing. Mm-hmm. In no time in history is this big influx of children, young kids jumping into boxing who never before would have watched boxing or even cared about it. They're actually tuned in, and hopefully these will become, and the way it's looking, these will become boxing fans in the future. So this is a great event. We're on the eve of something great. So although that night wasn't great for me in that fight, I live to be here today and be involved with this, so I'm happy.
I want to get into your role with Logan Paul, the KSI Logan Paul fight Saturday on DAZN, but can you believe it's been 13 years since you knocked out Lyakovich?
Wow, I lost count.
Are you officially retired?
No, sir.
I don't think
no fighter. I talked to Shane Mosley the other day, and I was like, he said, ever since I retired, I said, we never retire, we just relax.
I think Shane walked. Shane announced.
He did. He walked. He gracefully walked out in a great note. He's a great guy. So, yeah, he did great.
So you're still looking for...
I'm always hunting. I'm the champ, Shannon the Cannon. I'm always hunting.
Your last fight, though, 2016, that was in 2002. I believe, wasn't back then you were supposed to... It was David Haye was supposed to be your next fight?
Yes, champ.
What happened with that?
He chickened out. Yeah, he chickened out. And then, and then after that, I was going to fight... what's his name? Forgot his name. Not even important now.
You were...
so
what was
I was lined up to fight for the WBA title.
Oh, Frezza Kendo.
And unfortunately, that fight didn't happen. I was suspended. And then I just been really taking time off. I've been working. And honestly, I got three kids to feed, a wife at home, family at home. So I've basically been feeding my family. And for me, boxing has always been something that has been like... I don't moonlight as a fighter, don't get me wrong, but I have other businesses because boxing doesn't always, provide me to make a living, because I've been blackballed twice. Mm-hmm. Twice in a game of boxing, I've been blackballed, and I had to come back and hustle my way in, whether it was go out to outside investors and, get my way back in the game. So me surviving two blackballs, I've out-survived networks that... You know what I'm saying? Networks that blackballed the champ, Shannon the Cannon, told me you'll never get a fight on network television. I'm still here, mm-hmm. thanks to the internet. You feel me? So, with all that being said, man, it's a blessed time to be here. You know what I'm saying? I'm here with you. Look at you. You're getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
Look at you. You must take. Like, you must
the gray.
Be taking something
the
beautiful.
Gray in me is getting there. Shannon, it's still
champ.
When you look back on your career, from where you started, I mean, you were looked at in some ways as the heir to Tyson, coming out of your neighborhood and all that you kind of went through to get to a certain point. What do you think about your professional boxing career?
It was put together in within a year or so of really, I was homeless, as a teenager. I had lost me and my mom had lost our apartment living in Atlantic Towers in Brooklyn. And I came home from school one day, we were evicted. So I spent the next few years living house to house. Sometimes, it's no house, And then, I got into boxing, and Jimmy O'Farrell, took me in to train in his gym. And he taught me a few things that he said, look, you know how to fight. You got natural ability. I'm going to show you some things. And he was my, lifeline at the time. He was a great guy. He let me sleep in the gym sometimes. He even got me an apartment. He believed in me. He's seen the future in me. And, boxing came into my life. But it was a year and a half, 2 year period that I got serious as an amateur. And then I turned pro at 20. So you could really say from 18 to, 2 years, I had 36, 39 amateur fights. And now, then before that, I'm training with Teddy Atlas, and then everyone's saying you're the next Mike Tyson. I happen to be from the same neighborhood as Mike Tyson, but we lived different lives. I had a mom who loved me and took care of me, raised me, put me in Lutheran school, then Catholic high school for a year before we lost everything. So I was raised with a mom who loved me, although, we wasn't rich. We lived in a building that wasn't a like it wasn't a projects or anything. It was a working class, you know, place where you paid your rent. So a tenement. And so I came home from school and lost everything. But I wasn't a kid that was raised and going to jail. I had read the Bible 3-4 times by the time I was, you know, in high school. So I grew up in a loving home. Now all of a sudden I'm homeless. I'm living in the streets. In those years from 13 to 20, I had to go through a lot of hardships and learn the streets and survive. And that's where I got into boxing. And so to say, how did my career go? I went great considering that I was homeless. It, considering my mom was on drugs, my stepdad who raised me was in prison, he died in prison. My mother died on my birthday of an overdose. You know, doing drugs and those things. Considering that, the only child, I did phenomenal looking at my career. Mm-hmm. And now I'm training Logan Paul, the most, you know, one of the most popular kids in the internet. You know, on the internet today, and we're about to have a fight, and the whole world's going to watch. And guess who's helping him? Shannon McCann and Briggs. So I think it's okay.
You mentioned Teddy Atlas, your time with him. What's your memories of that experience working with Teddy?
It was cool. It was neat. It was necessary and needed, looking at my life and my career. It was meant to be. Can't go back and change it. There's no need to. I told someone the other day, Teddy is like, I'm a fight dog. You know what I'm saying? You look at body types, you look like a greyhound is like a runner, a track runner, right? Right? You look at like football players as a certain type of dog. I'm a fight dog. Mm-hmm. And Teddy Atlas is a fight dog trainer. So I'm lucky to have had Teddy because his methods got me to where I am. It taught me a lot as a man, taught me a lot about life. You know what I'm saying? You know, who to trust, who not to trust, and be my own self. Because at the end of the day, I'm my own man. So everything that happened to me, there's no level of look back and I say, well, I wish I could change this. I wish I could change that. Can't. First of all, you can't. Mm-hmm. And then second of all, I wear my defeats. I wear my losses, my pains, my hurts from my family losses, my family, you know, my mom, losing my mom, not having a family to hold on to me at times when I felt I needed, even when I was making bread, making money, and you having bad people around you, you know what I'm saying, hanging on as people just taking you, you know, just there for the ride. They laughing at your jokes and everybody want to enjoy you. Those are the times when you need friends and family, feel me? Me not having that a lot of times made me led to me making bad decisions, but I wear that too with a badge of honor. I wear all my defeats, all my losses, all my pains. I wear it. That's what makes me the champ. That's why I said it's a champion in all of us. You feel me? You just got to look at it like, you know what? I am a champ. I survived that. I survived this. That's what makes me a champ.
You
let's go, champ.
We'll get to the catchphrase
yeah.
there too. That's all time. That's now attached to you
let's
for
go,
life.
Champ.
The your first loss, you lost with Foreman as the commentator, right? Or one of the losses. What was that? What was the fight that Foreman
when
commented?
I lost to Dow Wilson, but I didn't lose. I learned.
Well, and Foreman said afterwards, like, Shannon's career is not over. No. And sure enough, you know, I think it was a couple years after that, you get an opportunity to fight Foreman.
Yes, sir. And he gave me the opportunity. And again, he was part of the plan that was set out for me to cross his path. And who would have ever thought that I would share the ring with the great George Foreman, one of the greatest fighters that ever lived on the planet Earth. You know what I'm saying? To ever have been in the same ring with him and have my name attached to him. You know, I don't even say I beat him. I just say I was in the ring with him. And fortunately, he gave me the belt. He passed me. He gave me an opportunity to have a life. You know what I'm saying? Because I wear that former linear heavyweight champion for the rest of my life. It'll probably be on my grave, my tombstone. But George Foreman gave me that. He gave it to me. He made a lot of money. He made a lot of success. He touched a lot of lives, and then he passed it to me. Funny, you know, not funny, but my mom had died prior to that, and I was in a bad place mentally. You know, I was suffering from depression since an early kid. And during that fight, you know, to perform and to, you know, hug me after the fight and have love for me, that was it. He gave me the gift that I needed. So with all that being said, that's what makes me the champion. That's what makes him the champ.
What was it like getting hit by George Foreman?
It was like putting your face in front of a bus when a bus is coming past 400 miles. Smacking you in the face, it's unreal. It's hard. I don't know. It felt like it was metal. Like something was in his fist, but it was just his fist. Just so hard. Everything is just so hard.
You had some line after the fact where you said something to the extent of, "He hit me once and it kind of knocked me out. He hit me again and woke me up."
Yeah, he did. He knocked me out. He hit me with a left hook, and I was going to go to sleep. But then he woke me back up. I was like, "Oh, thanks, champ." Yeah.
Did you think you won that fight when there was a lot of people wondered?
Yeah, you know, you got to watch the fight with the volume down. That's it. Watch the fight with the volume down. He was working for HBO. He's a commentator. Those are his commentator friends. They had money invested in him. Of course, he's got a huge contract fighting for HBO. He's a commentator for HBO. Come on. Mm-hmm. Of course, I won the fight. Turn it down. Watch it with no volume. No volume. Watch it turn down. Silence. You'll be like, oh, snap. You'll see I appointed the big man. I love him, but I appointed the champ. Mm-hmm. Let's go, champ.
The subsequent years, the later on, when you win the title in spectacular fashion against Lyakhovich, one of the better knockouts in heavyweight boxing, heavyweight title fight history.
Right.
After that, did you not take things as seriously as you should have? Like, what was the reason that you weren't able to maintain that level?
I was a kid, man, with no direction. I was a young man, not a kid. I was a young man with no direction, and I was basically making decisions and being led by people who probably wasn't, you know, we're looking to make money off of me. You know what I'm saying? Make money. It's a business. It's not about, you know, oh, let me hold your hand. I told you it's a fight business. Teddy Atlas is a fight dog trainer. You feel me? He trained fight dogs. I'm a fight dog. So, you know, every lesson learned, you know, I've been staying afloat financially all my life on my own. Ain't nobody babying me. Ain't nobody taking care of me. I've been having to find a way. So that's what I've been doing my years where you might not see me in the ring. I might be doing movies. I might be doing something else. You know what I'm saying? I got to do what I got to do to stay afloat and keep it going. I was homeless as a teenager. You know, I slept on a train, an A train, slept on a D train, slept in abandoned cars, abandoned truck, slept in a vestibule one time, a few times. You know what I'm saying? Not nowhere to sleep as a teen. And I vowed myself to always never go back to that. You feel me? If you lived in New York City and you felt that cold weather when it hit you in the wintertime.
I felt it.
Or even the summertime, you feel me? To not have to walk the streets summer nights, not knowing where you're going to sleep that night, and then just, you know, end up falling on the park bench or just, you know what I'm saying, falling asleep. I used to go to Washington Square Park and play chess all day. You know what I'm saying? And then get sleepy and just, you know, might go to a club in the middle, you know, go to a club and wash up in the McDonald's in the McDonald's on 14th Street. You feel me? Mm. It was like, you know, I was living a young teenage life in New York City, and the fortune I got into boxing, and here I am today talking to you, champ. Mm.
If you look back at all the fights you've had, if there was one that you wish, like, man, I wish I had been better prepared for, or I would like to do that one again.
All of them.
Is there one that stands out, though? I mean, whether it's Lewis. You had Lewis hurt, in that first round.
Yeah, but Lewis was a two-time Olympian. Mm-hmm. He went to the Olympics twice, and then he turned pro. I had 30-some amateur fights. I fought Felix Zivon. He went to the Olympics two, three times, won it. I had 33 amateur fights. I fought these big men. I'm not taking nothing away from them, but what could I have? I was just blessed to have, fortunate to have shared the ring and lost my title to him. I lost my title to him, so it ain't like, oh, Lennox Lewis beat me. I did, but I lost my title. I was the champion, I lost my title. He won the linear title for me, which he's proud of, that title and his sons. But you know what? I fought a great champion. I ain't get hurt. You know what I'm saying? My pride got hurt. My ego got hurt because I ain't win, but I ain't get hurt physically. Mm-hmm. And he's the great, man.
You showed heart in that fight. Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't think you'd get up.
Lennox Lewis is probably one of the greatest fighters of all time, especially heavyweight. Who could beat him? Look at his height. Look at his everything. He had a hell of a right hand. He didn't do a lot of stuff, but right hand, right uppercut, sometimes that left hook, but that jab. Lennox Lewis had a sick poking in your face jab, bang you up, bust you up hard. So he was one of the greatest, champ.
Was he with Emmanuel at that point?
Yes.
When he fought you? Yeah, yes, that's where, I mean, Emmanuel kind of gave, and Vladimir after that, time. Like, just handed them a terrific jab.
Yeah, Emmanuel Stewart. Come on, look what he did with them boys. Mm-hmm. Come on, proof is in the pudding. And I fought Lennox Lewis, and then Lennox Lewis, Manny started training me after that, but I wasn't in the right space mentally. Mm-hmm. I was young. I had a little bit of bread. I had a little bit of money. I was spending it. I had all the wrong people around me. You know what I'm saying? I never had, you know, I didn't have the maturity on my own to say, yo, I'm not doing this. I'm doing this. I had a lot of people around me and not telling me what to do, but giving me advice. Yo, let's go to this hangout. Let's go party. You should be seen with this person. You should go do this. You should, you know what I mean? And I was falling weak to that, whereas a lot of times I should have been, but I ain't have a trainer either. Let's get this straight. You got to understand, I've been training myself. since me and Teddy Atlas split, mm-hmm. and I was like 96, I've been really training myself. I've been working with dudes who wasn't equipped, and I was really training them. You know what I'm saying? On since 96 to now, I've been training myself. I work with guys here and there, but Shannon Briggs been training himself.
Do you think if you had been in a right frame of mind for Emmanuel, that you could have picked up that same style that made the other big men so successful?
Coulda, woulda, but who knows? You know what I'm saying? It was just, it was timing. Emmanuel had a lot going on. I had a lot going on. It wasn't the clash of personalities. It was like we both was partiers, me and Emmanuel. Emmanuel, nobody could party like Manny. Manny was the greatest party trainer of all times. You know what I'm saying? Love him to death. I don't think he's dead. He's around here somewhere. I'm telling people all the time. I say, yeah. I say, okay.
It's L.A. Manny, somewhere in L.A.
He's somewhere high enough. I know Manny, champ. Listen, Manny can't die.
How do you like to party? Where did he?
Hang out. That's the best. He's the greatest. Ask his fighters. Don't ask me. I'm just one. Don't get me to tell it. Let's go, champ.
Yeah. The Klitschko fight in 2010. That was a tough ending for you. I mean, how did you keep going after that?
I'm the champ. I'm Shannon the Cannon. Mm. I'm the two-time heavyweight champion of the world. Nothing
but that was a physical. I mean, that was, yeah. And you were in the hospital for a while after that.
Yeah, I was in the hospital for a couple of days, but only because the doctor that was supposed to do my surgery, he was on vacation. So they made me stay in the hospital another week or so, maybe longer, because of this so-called doctor. Now, I'm thinking now that, you know, it might have been a story that was pulling, you know what I'm saying, just to keep me in the hospital to make it seem like I was hospitalized for 14 days. I wasn't. I'm just being honest with you, champ. I ain't got nothing to lie about. Mm-hmm. It ain't like, oh, my ego or nothing like that. I wasn't. They said, look, it was like 3-4 days after the hospital. It was like, yo, the surgeon that we want to do your arm, it won't be here for like 8 more days. And I was already there for like 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. So they was like, he's the best. And he is the best. Look what they did. It's amazing. Sure. They fixed my arm. It popped in the first round. In the first round during the fight, my left joint and my left arm popped. And then my bicep tore as well. And I fought him for 12 rounds with one arm. So I must be the greatest. Not the greatest, but I must be something like the greatest.
You went 12 rounds. That's yeah, for sure. You hung in there. Showed some great heart in that one.
Yeah,
Before we let you go,
I'm with you. You got
some stuff. I've been looking forward to talking to you all day.
Okay.
You are training an internet sensation in Logan
yes.
Paul,
yes.
but you have been an internet sensation. The stalking of Vladimir Klitschko was. Tell me where that all came from. And I mean, you got him on a paddle. You get him on the paddleboard and swirling around him was like one of the most insane things I've ever seen.
Everywhere, the gym, everywhere. You know, I was coming back from depression. I was 403 pounds. I was out of shape. I had been blackballed in boxing again. And basically, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get my life together, man. And I started saying, let's go, champ, as a mantra to get myself going because all my entourage was gone, all my friends was gone, the people that was around me that was taking my money or whatever, they was gone. I was by myself. I was flat broke. And then I started saying to myself, I don't got nobody, but I got myself. And then my daughter was born. I looked at her, and I was like, I got two boys, but now I got a little baby girl. And I was like, you know what? I got to make some bread. I got to make some money for my family. I want to do be living in a shelter. I was homeless as a kid. I'm not going back to that. So I started saying, you know what? I'm going to get a fight. So I started using my own mantra. Let's go, champ. Let's go, champ. Let's go, champ. Let's go, champ. And I started telling myself, you could do it. So I lost 168 pounds. Every day I just started walking, champ. Every day I just get out there and start eating right. I started going to Whole Foods. And then I started going to the gym and I ran into, Vladimir Klitschko. And I had fought his brother and I wasn't happy that I lost that fight. And in fact, if they tried to hype it up like he did this, they said he broke my orbital bone and he did this. And it was all fake. That happened. So I was like, you know what? Let me know how his brother and see you check his temperature. You feel me? Because I already lost here. I fought your brother, but you know what? Let me see what it's like. So I went to him, just on something, yo, what's up? How you doing, champ? And he dissed me. He was like that. And I was like, you know, to myself, like, you know, what's this, the champ? And let me, you know, hey, champ, how you doing? And I put my hand out, and he just walked past and was like, he did just like this with his glasses on. So his boy that was with him, the trainer, what's his name? Jonathan Banks.
Jonathan Banks, yeah.
Mickey. I call him Mickey. I was like, yo, what's up with your boy? He was like, oh, you know, He don't like champ. He don't like people just saying hello to him. So I was like, what? What kind of champion does that? What kind of champion don't meet the fans and say hello? So then I was motivated. So then I was like, yo, you know, I told Chris Lawrence, who owned the gym at the time, like, yo, what's up with Vladimir? He was like, oh, you know, he don't really care for you. That's how he is. He trying to like, you know, I guess like stuck up. So I was like, nah. This is it, champ. I know how I'm going to get back in the ring. I'm going to knock this chump out. So I started stalking him. Every time I see him, I just started putting pressure on him. And then it was a girl that I know that worked in the docks, and she said he would always come down there swimming. So I went out there two, three times. He wasn't out there. So I thought she was bullshit. Excuse me. I thought she was playing.
You're good.
And then we went out there the third or fourth time, and he was out there, champ. I couldn't believe it. I could still remember it. I seen him. I said, look at him, y'all. And I said, get him. So we pulled up, and I started talking to him. He was terrified. He never thought Shannon Briggs would show up. I'm everywhere, champ. They can't stop me. Look at me.
It's a great story. Now, finally, the working as a trainer for Logan Paul, what would you say to the boxing purists out there that say a fight like this is a total joke, that you know it shouldn't be headlining a card on a DAZN network,
You don't know what you're talking about. Let me explain to you guys. This is phenomenal. This is great. We are about to introduce millions of new fans. This is what boxing needed. This is what boxing needs and what boxing needed. People always crying about, oh, UFC is better than boxing, or we losing fans and blah, 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 MMA. We ain't losing fans. People who love MMA love boxing and vice versa. You know what I'm saying? The old dinosaurs, not necessarily, but it's no competition. It's all contact sport. It's all MMA. But let me say this. With this fight happening, you got millions of kids who be on their phone all day. They be on YouTube. They don't care about boxing. They never watch boxing. Never was going to watch boxing. But guess what now? They tuning in Saturday. And forever now, they always have known boxing. And guess what? They might become boxers, judges, managers, promoters, fans, gamblers who go to the casinos. And this is why the casinos pay. Casinos pay for people to come in. Guess what? These guys going to be bringing people to the casinos. Let's go, champ.
Looking forward to it. Shannon Briggs, we'll see you Saturday night. You're the best, and Chris. Logan Paul's
You're the
corner.
Best,
Good
Chris.
To see you again, man.
Thank you, champ. You too.